This is Corolla Digital. This is Reasonable Doubt with your hosts, Mark Garagus and Adam Carolla.
Yeah, get it on. Got to get it on a choice, but to get it on mandate. Get it on, and welcome to the best hour in the universe. It's a Reasonable Doubt. I'm Adam Carolla. It's Mark Garagus. Mark, where are you?
I am sitting in a parking lot in Cranston, Rhode Island, as we speak.
Well,
You were just talking about if we were roommates. If we were roommates, I've got a spare bedroom. You could be upstairs. But, you know, that was a pretty good rant that you just went on because it really kind of appealed to me.
He was explaining to Mark that he asked me how I was. Says, I'm a little bit busier than I'd like to be. But I'm fine, but it's exacerbated by everyone at my house who is chillaxing. Like, well, here's what I'm saying. Lynette works, but Lynette works on her own terms. I work on everyone else's terms.
Exactly. So you work for the man.
I don't have any choice but to be at the whatever honky-tonk on Friday night, standing on stage, or at the event on Saturday night, or whatever it is. I am jealous of anyone who gets to work sort of on their own terms, which is somehow not having to leave the house or doing it from a sushi bar. But either way.
You know who I was thinking about? I was really kind of commiserating about this week was Paul Manafort, the former campaign manager for Trump, who's on trial.
I have so much to ask you about that situation. Now,
first of all, I cannot believe that I have never tried a case in front of this particular judge, because this judge seems like my kind of judge.
Right.
All he wants to do is, he's an equal opportunity curmudgeon. He loves to slam both sides, which I love. That's all I ever ask for. My biggest pet peeve with judges is where they carry the water for the prosecution or they're kind of pro-defense on either side. I just would rather they were an equal opportunity curmudgeon. And this guy has got quite the wit, and it just sounds like it would be so much fun to try a case in there. I mean, at one point, he prohibited the prosecution from using the term oligarch, which I just love, because they said that was prejudicial and tainted. And then I think I was reading part of the transcript or the reporting on it where he was complaining that the government was just showing pictures of his lavish lifestyle, Manafort's lavish lifestyle, and that's not illegal. He can spend money any way he wants.
Yeah.
Did you see that part?
Oh, this guy, he had me, this judge, I love this guy, because he said, at a certain point when they're like, and there's Manafort, another $3,000 suit. And he's like, it's not a crime to be rich. You got to move on.
Exactly. I mean, one of those sport coats, it was a crime to own. But other than that, the fact that he was spending money, it's a typical government lawyer style move, because they figure if you show, you know, they think jurors are stupid. It really is kind of pandering, because they figure we're going to get into kind of a class warfare. Let's show his expensive $15,000 ostrich coat. Let's show his this, that, or the other thing, and that's going to really piss people off because, you know, it does this. And what they don't understand kind of is people want to be rich. I mean, there is a certain aspect of that's why people are in America. They've got the urge to do the American dream. It isn't to punish people because they got rich, is it?
Well, it's an interesting thing, which is before, you know, 1999 or 2000 or whatever, in trials and in these situations and in these presentations, how often did they harp on the person being rich or being successful or driving an expensive car or having a vacation home? I'm guessing they didn't bring it up very often, because prior to this crazy era we're living in, the jury would have thought more of the person to to have afforded all these things or been successful enough to do these things. Now we have to find anybody. you know, it's like it's basically like you going to a party, you're aesthetic looks are a five, and you're going to find anyone who's a six or better and punch them in the gut. My plan is find a nine and try to fuck them.
Exactly. I'm pretty sure that that's, you know, if you're not just angry for 100 different reasons, that that's the more satisfying or grounded way to be, don't you think?
Well, the best thing I ever did was find a bunch of people, and I listen, Mark, and in all honesty, I include you in this group of people. What Shelby Coffey, who used to editor in chief of the Times, the guy used to train boxing, and even Dr. Drew, and to some extent Jimmy Kimmel. I found a bunch of successful people. And I went, what are they doing? I need to do that. Not I need to chuck a rock at their Cadillac. More like I need some of that to rub off on me. So. Quite the opposite. Find not that I'm going to mold my life after Manafort's, but what I'm saying is in general, the gestalt of what we're talking about is don't resent successful people, seek them out, and they're oftentimes very generous with their advice, and see if you can just go ahead and act as if.
I can't echo that enough. The greatest mentors I've ever had, I could name 10 of them over my lifetime, who always were very generous and always wanted to pull somebody up. And I know you do the same now to people who are younger and coming up. I do the same thing with my younger lawyers and other people who work. I just don't get this idea. As you say, the chucking a rock at a Cadillac or being jealous or of somebody else. The only people that I ever get really jealous of are the people who've been able to figure it out and can do what they want, when they want, as opposed to, as you say, having to kind of be a slave to, I don't know, the everyone else's wishes or being the hamster on a wheel.
Right. Well, yeah. I'll swing you by my house for some inspiration. Or just show up any day between, well, don't show up before noon. Between noon and 4 p.m. Then they're going to mistake you for the Post-it guy who's delivering Taco Bell. So you're going to have to deal with that. All right.
Yeah,
I want to thank TheraWorksRelief.com for the show and TommyJohn.com/Adam and LegalZoom.com. Use the code DOUBT. So many Manafort questions. Oh, what did I say?
Yes.
Postmates. Sorry. What did I say? Yellow?
Yeah, no, Post-its.
Post-its. Postmates. Sorry. There's too much. Just too much. You know what? When I was young, when Mark and I were young, GM would put out a new model of a car like every 3 years. So you had to remember, like, what's Chevy doing this year? They got something called a Chevette.
Right.
Okay, what is that? It's a smaller Chevy. Okay, I think I could handle that. And then you get 3 years. Now there's 10 new car models every 10 minutes. Which Tesla? You got the X? You got that P90? You got the P90X? No, that's a workout. Oh, wait a minute. One of these things is a supplement for your dick, right? No, this is a car. I can't remember. There's a new startup. There's new companies. There's new tech. I'm sitting around a Uber, Lyft. There's so much coming, you know, and then I get made fun of. What do you mean? It's not the Waze. It's Waze, you idiot. And it's like, I've learned 2,000 names in the last 20 minutes. I'm confused.
And the problem is now I can't remember a phone number because my smartphone does the dialing. So, I mean, you can see where the brain is headed.
So
Manafort.
Yes.
Manafort. What?
I'll give you a nutshell of what I've learned. I watch Fox. Fox is outraged that they're not saying he's not guilty of anything. They want to know why this has to do with this investigation or what this has to do with this investigation, meaning this is a thing to uncover Russian collusion with Trump. And now we got this guy in tax evasion from 2005. What does this have to do with what we're here for? It's sort of Fox's angle on the whole thing. CNN's angle and MSNBC's angle is just to cover the trial. They don't make any judgments as to why we're here. They're just, here's what's going on. Here's what the judge says. So,
and this judge, by the way, was also one who Trump had praised at one point because he had asked, He was having some fun with the prosecution. They have a lawyer named Michael Dreeben, who is legendary in appellate legal circles. And so when the guy walks in to do his appearance, he asks him to spell his name and then starts peppering him with questions about, isn't the only reason they're prosecuting this case to get him to sing the government's song and blah, blah, blah. Look, whichever way you feel about Trump, this has to be, to my mind, government prosecution at its worst, because first of all, I understand, you know, they can't, or if they come across a case, they've got to prosecute it, blah, blah, blah. It reminds me of the old cop adage that it was in plain view and we did the search. We went in to arrest somebody and then we saw the cocaine on the mirror, so we had to arrest everybody, blah, blah, blah. But the problem remains, and the reason that it doesn't quite feel right is in the Southern District, when they ran across the Michael Cohen stuff, the special counsel referred that to the Department of Justice in the Southern District. So the Department of Justice is doing that investigation. Now, in this case, if there's no Russian collusion and they came across this Manafort tax evasion stuff, why wasn't this referred over to the Department of Justice? Why does the special counsel still have that?
For lay people, you're saying, hey, you can't ignore a crime if you come across a crime when you're investigating another crime, but you don't need the special tactics unit dealing with that crime. That just gets referred over to the people who handle crime. This is
exactly, I would just guess that that's exactly why the judge was saying, Why are you guys here? Why is the special counsel here? It's obvious you're not looking to vindicate the tax interest of the taxpayers. You're looking to get this guy to roll. And that's, I don't care which side of the debate you're on, that is not something that you want your criminal justice system engaging in.
Well, I've heard the term that I'll butcher a little bit, but it's basically he can either sing or compose, which is not just tell him what he knows, but there's an element where they say, well, maybe he composes. Maybe he just makes some shit up.
Well, I've had the two people in my career, and I've been fortunate in that sense, Susan McDougall and Greg Anderson. Greg Anderson was the trainer in the Balco scandal who was very close friends with Barry Bonds and famously said he would go to jail rather than testify against Bonds. Both of those people, everybody always thought in McDougall's case it was because she was loyal to Bill Clinton, and in Greg's case people surmised it was because he was loyal to Barry Bonds. And
Greg also played like saxophone in Tower of Power or something. He had a crazy musical past.
So both of those people said the same thing. It wasn't their loyalty to the person who was the target of the investigation, respectively Clinton and Bonds. It was the fact that they just so despised the prosecution and the fact that the prosecution was trying to get them to lie that they just weren't going to play ball with them, literally. And so they would rather go to jail than to sing or compose and read from the prosecutorial script. And you got to admire that, because most clients, when I go in to see them, I mean, a guy could be in for parking tickets that have accumulated sitting in custody. And if I told him if he pled to a burglary, he'd get out today, he'd do it. So that's most people's reaction.
Well, I'm going to tease this, but let's try to figure out this Manafort thing. So the right is outraged that he's on trial. Well, there's a couple things that the right doesn't like. The right is sort of, what's this have to do with Trump? Also mixed with, he's being threatened with 30 years or 60 years and something that normally averages out to like a year and 3 months. So where are those two things coming from? I'd be curious to know, in your mind, what would justify 30 years or 60 years or whatever the number is versus the average? And the average is probably what these guys do, and they probably get more. But How is this so egregious that it calls for this, or is this more leverage against Manafort and Trump? And that's my main question. I'm going to tease it, but I want to know if I'm Tucker Carlson and I say, hey, come on now. This is normally 18 months or 15 months. They're talking about 30 years. The guy's 69. He's going to die in jail. I want to know what Mark Geragos would say if he was defending that. And first, I'll tell you about Tommy John. Outsmart the heat and humidity with men's and women's cool cotton underwear from Tommy John. I did what I did last night. I took a dip in my pool in my Tommy John underwear, and then I hung it out in the shower last night. And this morning, I got up. It was dry. I popped them right back on and hit the road, baby. I'm wearing them right now. Made with moisture-wicking technology, dries 4 to 5 times faster than regular cotton. Keeps you 2 to 3 times cooler. Guaranteed to never ride up, bunch, sag, no wedgies. It's impossible. Here's the deal. I will just say this, whether it's a restaurant or underpants, you'll never go back. No, you'll always go back. If it's a restaurant, you'll never go back to what you're wearing. It's like you go to this place, it's Tommy John, and you'll go, from now on, that is my that's the underwear I shall wear. That is Tommy John.
Their shirts. I don't think they give enough props to their shirts. Their shirts are literally next level.
They stay tucked in. They work perfectly. It's not like wearing a shirt under a shirt. And by the way, fully back in stock for the women's underwear. It was sold out. Now it's all back in stock. Right, Gary?
That is right. Hurry to TommyJohn.com/Adam for 20% off your first order. That's TommyJohn.com/Adam for 20% off. TommyJohn.com/Adam.
So you are the legal analyst, and you sort of lean left, and you're my guest on Tucker Carlson or Hannity or something. And I go, what the F is going on with this 30-year sentence? Come on now. This normally 15 months.
Well, this is what the reality is. And I literally just had a client in New York who was sentenced to 21 months and was facing almost exactly the same kind of thing. They were banding about, I think the sentencing guidelines called for 270 months. I love that when also under the guidelines when they always talk about months, because if you say years, people go, what the hell? Are we talking about 30 years or 20 years? But the guidelines, depending on the amount of money in federal court, will tell you, you add 12 levels here, or 18 levels here, or 20 levels here, and it starts to get into these incredible numbers. That's what the exposure is. As a practical matter, the judges now have, federal judges now, Article III judges have the ability to deviate from the guidelines. There was a period of time during the practice of criminal defense and in the criminal justice system where they didn't have that leeway. They had to, absent certain things, had to sentence you within the guidelines. Now they can, it's kind of come full circle to the way it was back in 83 and 84. But the reality is that the judge can't, if you go to trial in the federal system, you automatically, and especially if you testify, you're going to lose any kind of break that you normally get, because they've got what they call a 3 levels for acceptance of responsibility, which means it moves you from category, you know, one category, like a level 19 takes you down to a level 16, and that's the serious amount of time. Then if you testify and if you lose the case, the government takes the position that you've obstructed justice, because obviously if you testify and you lose, you must have been lying. And so there's a couple of levels back up for that. So there's a real penalty in the federal criminal law to taking a case to trial and losing. And the problem you get is if you enter into a deal early on, most of the time you can get some kind, you can craft a plea agreement that will get you a better deal than if you go to trial and make them have to prove their case.
Hey, Gary, tell me what Wesley Snipes got, how much time he got, and how much time he did. And then,
and then also, if I remember correctly, when he was tried, I think he was acquitted of the felonies and just got convicted of the misdemeanors. Because he was one of those guys who bought into the the tax code is a scam thing. And
yeah.
that is a defense, because if your mindset is that there is a mental element component to tax evasion.
And hold on a second. And did he have to pay the money back in total, or is there time spent, like they'll do? They'll go, look, you either pay your warrant or you spend 3 days in jail. Is that a situation in tax in these situations?
Tax is almost always. I didn't want to jump on Gary. Did you find it, Gary?
No, it's okay. I'm going to need a little bit of time to answer some of the subsequent questions. But the first one was he was sentenced to 3 years, and it looks like he got out after about 2 years and 3 or 4 months, and then had a 2 or 3 extra months of house arrest. So he was scot-free about 2.5 years of his 3-year conviction.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm pretty sure, Gary, to see if it references it, I'm pretty sure he was acquitted on
it. It does say acquitted of the felony count.
Hey, how I would do this if I was defending Wesley Snipes? I'd say I'd like to ask a question that you guys aren't going to shut your mic, Gary. Thank you. Or mouth. Either one. I would just, if I was defending Wesley Snipes, I would go, hey, I'd like to pose a general question. Does anyone know the average amount that a black male pays in taxes over his career who just has a high school education? All right. Oh, I have the number. That average amount is $3,221 a year. Now, Wesley Snipes, for the last 25 years, has paid in over $1 million every single year. We can continue the charade, but as far as I can tell, he is way above the median of the average black man with a high school education in this country. So instead of prosecuting him, let's go out and find out if we can't get that $3,200 number up just a little bit. And my client will take his apology in the form of a fruit basket. Because my old thing with taxes is, I don't know where Wesley Snipes is from. I don't know what his background is, but I'm going to just go ahead and call him an earner. I'm going to say he's on the happy side of the ledger. And one thing he can't do when he's incarcerated for 2.5 years is earn.
Well, yeah. And can you imagine how much it costs to prosecute him as well?
Oh, my God. It's like
I can't even imagine.
But that's my whole thing. It's like, do you guys want money or don't you want money? Because this whole thing seems to be about money. And if you're not getting the money from him, I'm going to save you some money on a trial, and I'm going to save you some money on incarceration. I'm going to put this guy out. He's going to work, and he's going to pay in. But Gary will look up those other things. Let's get back to Manafort. So there's two angles. So one is, so what you're saying in essence is that number, which sounds unreasonably high or higher than the average, is justified because of the amount of money and the many extenuating circumstances. Yes.
Well, yeah, it's justified, meaning that's what the exposure is. As a practical matter, he's never going to get it. The only time guys get that kind of time, 30 years or whatever, is when you're a Madoff and there's a public outcry or hue and cry for it, generally.
Right.
You can always pick and choose cases over the years where guys got unreasonably long sentences, but there's usually, if you go behind it, you can figure out why. It's just a matter of the guidelines. It's all the guidelines. I mean, they were instituted under this rubric of, this is going to make sentences uniform across the country. We don't want to have a sentence in California that differs markedly from one in Nebraska or one in Tennessee. But ultimately, at the end of the day, we found that that was idiotic and it didn't work, and they had to make them once again advisory and not mandatory. But that's what the exposure is. I mean, literally, the code reads each one of those counts, and mind you, the prosecutor is the one who can pile on and add counts. So if you've got 5-year counts, meaning each conviction on a count carries with it a potential of 5 years, then you can stack it. You could say, yeah, I've got 5 counts, 5 5-year counts, I'm exposed to 25 years. That's only if a judge sentences you consecutively as opposed to concurrently. And so, you know, a lot of times I know that it's rhetoric and it's people trying to get people's attention, but if there was any precision in this, people would understand the reality is 5 5-year counts totaling an exposure of 25 years doesn't mean that that's what you're going to get.
All right, so that's a little hyperbole.
Yes.
So if you hear Tucker Carlson or Sean Hannity, they go 30 years when the average is 1.3, but that's the average served, and
correct.
No one's ever going to do. He's not going to do 30 years or 60 years or whatever it is. When he gets out, it'll be 141 when he let him out.
Well, that was, you know, California. Maybe 10 or 15 years ago, was all the rage to just stack sentences, and guys would get, you know, 200 years, 150 years. Prosecutors used to brag about it. I just got my guy sentenced to, you know, 240 years. And it was just like, what universe are you living in? What kind of a game are you playing? I'm 240 years.
Well, so here's a couple questions then. As far as you're talking about optics and the public and Bernie Madoff and situations like that, would the prosecution move forward with this case, or at least with this case as it fell under the umbrella of the Trump investigation, if CNN and ABC and the New York Times were all going to be outraged by this misuse of justice?
I think, based on what I've seen so far, this is a prosecution that would be brought. I think the numbers, a lot of this depends on numbers. Because remember, what normally happens is there may be an audit or there's a divorce filing, and somebody is diming out somebody else about hiding taxes or hiding money offshore. Generally, that will get rejected if it's a de minimis amount. If it's not that much money, the prosecution's not going to get into it. Or they'll resolve it civilly. But when you start talking these kinds of numbers, as Judge Damrell used to say up in Sacramento, Mr. Garavis, you start throwing around a million here, a million there, before you know it, you're talking about real money. And so this is real money. So I don't begrudge the prosecution itself. I just don't understand why these special counsels got it when there's already in the same investigation a template or a roadmap for them to refer it back to the Department of
Justice. Well, that's kind of what I'm talking about. I'm not talking about the case. Obviously, he owes a lot, or he's done what he's done in terms of he should be prosecuted, but done by the special counsel. Would they have gone through with that if there was going to be outrage amongst the NBCs, the New York Times, the CNNs, and the like? Do you believe that?
I do not believe that they would have done it in the face of that. I guess people would automatically knee-jerk refer to Martha Stewart and say, well, look, that was a prosecution that outraged traditional media. But at the same time, that's probably a pretty good lesson as to why they wouldn't do it.
Yeah, well, I don't think Martha, it's such an optics thing now. Like, you have this rich white dude in $5,000 suits, and it's like, oh, go get him. Like, nobody, you're not going to hear the ladies on The View defending that dude. That dude's rich, and he's white, and he's got a weird comb over, and he uses Just for Men, and that's perfect. Now, if this is, you know, not the black grandma that Kim Kardashian got sprung a couple of months back. This is another target, and you're not going to get yelled at by the chicks in The View for this. But I want to do this, and Gary's going to fill us in on Wesley Snipes, or whether you have to pay back the total amount if you do the time, which I'm very curious about.
Yeah, I'll give you that answer. But first, you know
yes.
what I'm going to talk about?
Mm.
TheraWorks.
Yes.
TheraWorks Relief. Dr. Drew's favorite. I watched him do a long-form commercial on TheraWorks. Did you see this?
I saw the short-form one, and then my children were delighted when they saw him pop up on TV.
Right. There's Dr. Drew. Mm-hmm. If you're one of the millions who suffer from muscle cramps in your legs and feet, Relief is finally in sight. TheraWorks Relief. Topical foam. It's clinically proven to relieve muscle cramps fast. With daily use, you even prevent them before they start. You don't even need a prescription. You just takes minutes to apply. It absorbs quickly, and it really works. And you can get TheraWorks Relief at select CVS, Rite Aid, Walgreens pharmacies, or go to TheraWorks, and this is how you spell it, TheraWorksRelief.com. Talk to your pharmacist about TheraWorks Relief and experience relief from muscle cramps for yourself.
All right. So Gary will give us that. I also want to just circle back a little, and maybe Mark can provide this. I can help a little bit. The Manafort case, just the broad strokes, the general strokes of what he's being accused of, when he did it, how it is germane to the Trump investigation or not, and so forth. Hey, first quick question, Gary. All right, Dawson, yell at Matt, the porcelain punisher final air. See if Max Pat is here yet.
He is.
Oh, good. All right. Well, then we're good. Go ahead. Broad strokes, Manafort case.
It's an interesting question. Don't you think that the only explanation for the fact that it wasn't referred over to the Southern District is because they want him to rule? I think that's the only question. And the judge who's closest to it believes the same thing. So I'm perplexed by the by it, and I don't understand, because the counterbalance to that, I suppose, is that they did do it with Cohen, and I don't understand why they do it with Cohen, because I would assume they want him to roll, and he's kind of put out every hint or clue that he will take care of his family first, blah, 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 go and do, didn't he meet with Al Sharpton?
Maybe I don't know. I hope I never have to meet with Al Sharpton. It's always a bad sign. Something gone has gone horribly wrong. You must have gotten drunk and sent the world's worst tweet out at 4 a.m. if you have to meet with Al Sharpton.
Gary, am I right? Didn't he meet with Al Sharpton?
I can't imagine. I didn't hear about that. Yeah. Hey, you want to meet on the West Coast, or should we go to Hymie Town? That's what Al Sharpton calls New York. All right. So I'm sure that went over well with Cohen. But what in general has the general broad strokes of the case is what, 05, 06, tax evasion? He did meet with Al Sharpton, so says Gary.
Yeah, that's usually a pretty good indication that you are ready to rock and roll.
I tell you what, you should yell at everyone who works for you. Forget about attorneys, down to the cleaning lady. You keep this shit up, you'll be meeting with Al Sharpton by Friday. That'll be your threat. That's my general threat. Everyone within the sound of my voice, everyone who works for me, you keep this shit up, you'll be meeting with Al Sharpton by Friday. You'll be eating lunch with Al Sharpton. You'll be asking him for advice.
Good though, recently. Have you seen? Well, I don't know what he's done to himself. My goodness,
he's
lost like 150 pounds.
I think he may have went to the same surgeon as Al Roker.
Oh, you think he did? He popped the gasket.
I think so. More stuff for Gary to look up. Not that that surgeon only works on black personalities. I'm just saying. He was the first one that jumped to mind. That'd be a good series on, let's put it on like YouTube Red, like Black Surgeon. I only work on black people. So the broad strokes of the case.
Right. So you've got, I think they put on, when you're listening to this, it would have been today or yesterday. So I think they put on a tax preparer, and he said that he was never told about the foreign accounts. That's usually a bad fact. I suppose on cross-examination, if I'm defending Manafort, I'm going to try to drill down as to why that not talking about the foreign accounts is any different than when Apple or when the large insurance companies all park their money in Ireland or park their money overseas. before it gets repatriated back to the U.S. for tax purposes. You know, there's always, in these cases, the distinction between trying to minimize your tax, which is not illegal, with tax avoidance, which also is not always illegal. I mean, there's a reason that there are high-priced tax preparers and high-priced tax lawyers who structure transactions to try to avoid the tax. I mean, that's one of the things that there's a whole cottage industry of that.
Well, by the way, Al Sharpton says 100% exercise and 100% diet. Now, Al Sharpton, I think himself was on the hook for about $4 or $5 million worth of taxes and is essentially a known liar. So we don't take all that with a grain of salt.
Yeah, he does. He has tax issues, right?
He has or had. I think he owed about $4 or $5 million as well. But I think it'd be racist for us to talk about it. Did Wesley Snipes did what, Gary?
So there was a lot of questions in there. One of them was about how much he earned. This article cites that from 99 to 04 in a 5-year period, he earned about $40 million. That was kind of the height of his star power. And then this article, which is from 2015, so long after he had served his time and moved on, he does have to continue to pay back the stuff he was in prison for not paying.
I guess I should have known that because we did that to like Joe Louis and stuff like that. The government is so horrible. We take like Joe Louis and he pays. Again, I don't know what the average black guy was paying in the 30s and 40s, but I bet you Joe Louis did a little better than most. He guy went to the service and did this, that, and the other. And at the end, he owed taxes. And I think the government just had him do like exhibition bouts for the next 10 years where he got his head got conked in the side of the head by guys that were 25 years younger than he was to pay his tax burden.
Well, I can tell you firsthand experience. When I started, the first time I represented Mike Tyson was specifically to try to extricate him and Kiki from a horrific IRS tax situation. And, I mean, he was in it. Somebody had walked him into an arrangement where I think that virtually every dollar he earned, over $300,000, went to the government. And so, as you can imagine, you have very little incentive to do anything at that point. And I think that was hanging over his head for something like 10 years before I got involved, and we got that all straightened out. And then Willie Nelson's another one. Isn't Willie Nelson on a perpetual tour to try to pay off the IRS?
Well, it's high time these poor uneducated black guys and country singers pay their fair share is what I'm saying. They got to pay their fair share. I would like to find the guy who came up with the phrase and put the two words together, which is pay your fair share, and get a running start and kick that fucker in the nutsack. Like, do you understand what the definition of fair share is? The definition of fair share is everyone pays the exact same amount who receives the same thing. Like a fucking Golden Corral, you idiot. I'm at a Golden Corral where Kalen paid $4.99 and Gary paid $7.99 and Matt Fondelier paid $11.99. What's my bill, Mr. Carolla? $17,000. That's the Golden Corral we all live in, and I have a bunch of assholes coming up to me going, hey, man, when are you going to pay your fair share? I don't know. Why don't you talk to Kalen? I just paid $17,000 for the same fucking ribs he just ate. You want to know my fair share? So you're insane. This is the ramblings of an insane person. The idea that politicians grab this and run with it makes you fucking nuts. Fair share. Fuck you. I'm eating the same fucking ribs and chicken as Kalen. I just paid $17,000 for my tray, and he paid $4.99. And people are pissed at me?
Yeah. I know. And I don't think anybody truly understands how ridiculous it is. I have three people who are literally work full time to try to compile and pay and deal with taxes. Full time. And not just one, you know, you would say, well, the IRS, it's not that complicated. No, you got the IRS, and then the FTP jumps on you. Then you got the Board of Equalization. Now there's a California tourism tax, if you can believe that. You've got to take your, you're supposed to, I was reading the form and I said, only some government bureaucrat could come up with the idea that a business owner has got nothing better to do than to try to figure out from your credit card receipts where and how far a person drove to get to your establishment. You're supposed to try and figure out if they came from more than 50 miles away. Because if they came from more than 50 miles away, then you've got to calculate the dollar value and be taxed on that. Who came up with this? Why would anybody think? And all of this, and then I actually called the office and asked, what is it that I get for this tax? What are you doing for me? We have a tourism office. Oh, really? The tourism office. What does the tourism office do? Well, we put together PSAs about California. Really? And I get to pay for that on top of it after I've spent 4 days of time trying to figure out, going through credit card receipts, trying to figure out if somebody drove more than 50 miles to eat at my restaurant or stay at my hotel?
First off, it's an insanely flawed system because you sit around all day, Mark Garagus, and you try to figure out, how do I work more? How do I get more clients? How can I be more efficient with my time? How can I multitask? How can I keep all these plates spinning and all these endeavors? I sit around all day, and I go, well, what can I do? Well, you know, last Friday night, I went out and did a show, and this Saturday night, I'll go out and do a show. So I'm free weekends. I can step out of the house and put a little more in the tax coffers. But these people, they don't have a job. Their job is getting money from you.
Right.
Your job is earning money. Their job is taking your money. So they sit around all day and they go, how can I get Carolla and Mark Garagus to give us more money? That's the mode they're in. What if we had a tourism tax? Huh? I like the way that sounds. Where are we going with this? Well, he's got a hotel and a restaurant. Yeah. Well, who would go there? Tourists? All right, let's tax their ass. How about that? Obviously, it's a situation where the people in charge sit around all day and try to figure out ways to extract more money. Not ways to spend the money more efficiently, not ways to earn money, ways to extract money. So how could this go any other way? And what drives me insane is to hear politicians, like when Obama was in South Africa last week, and he's like, hey, all I'm saying is, you know, do you have to keep getting more and more and taking and taking and taking? How about if you're rich, you just pay a little more, just give a little something back so other people can have stuff. Yeah, that's what you do, Mark. You just take and take and take. You don't take, you earn. And it's not give a little something back so other people can have stuff. It's up to them whether they would like to work weekends or not. Not that has nothing to do with me giving a little something back so that they can have a bed.
Well, and by the way, when it's slow at the, you know, if it's 120 degrees, for instance, in Palm Springs, and there aren't a whole lot of people who are staying at a hotel, do I just tell the employees, I'm not going to pay you this week, it's slow here. I just decided, you know, forget payroll. And by the way, Mr. Vendor, I know you need your money, but I'm not going to pay it this week. I just decided I'm not going to pay you. I don't understand this idea but the government is there, and they want a tax on every single dollar.
The insane part is then when you hear the politicians go, they just take and take and take. All we're asking is to give back. Well, wait a minute. You're out working 24/7. You're earning. They are taking. By definition, they take. When I go out Saturday night and do a show and make several thousand dollars, I'm earning. Then I cut off a slice, and it's much bigger than the guy who booked the show. That guy gets 10%, and it's much bigger than the manager or the agent. That guy gets 10% or 15%. I'm going to lop off 40% and give it to you who are home sleeping because it was a Saturday night, and you weren't out sweating your ass off on stage. Now, who's earning and who's taking? Because right now, I think you flipped the script. You got me taking and somehow these people earning. The ultimate take is you, the government. You're taking everyone's money.
Yeah. Exactly.
I wish they'd use the word earn. I wish a politician was honest enough to use the word earn instead of take. You know, you're out there taking, Mark. Adam, you're out there taking and taking. When are you going to give something back?
Ugh.
All right. So Manafort, quickly, let's see if we can just he gets into big time tax problems in like 05 or maybe 06. He hooks up with Trump down the road. So then why can we connect Manafort to Trump when this happened some years before he got into Trump's camp?
Because the idea is, and this happens all the time also, is you get prosecuted for one thing, and then they squeeze you so that you will then cooperate to avoid God knows how much time in order to give them something on the person that they want. That's a tried and true federal prosecutorial game plan.
And as you said from the beginning, also being around and working on Whitewater with the Clintons, you always said, and I don't think you're going to deviate from this, this could go no other way. This is how every one of these things goes, right?
Exactly right. We said it 2 years ago. We talked about it starting 2 years ago. It's the same. It's literally the same thing that happened then. It took a while for the Democrats to understand what was going on back during Whitewater, and then Clinton was able to survive it because the economy was great, and the same thing is happening right now. It took a while for the Republicans to understand it and start complaining about it, because, mind you, they were the ones, that's the irony of all this, they were the ones back in the 90s who were endlessly pursuing Clinton, and he survived it because of the economy, and I suspect that as long as the economy is good, Trump will survive it.
Very interesting flip of the script, which, by the way, just goes to show you, politicians are politicians. They don't have virtuous ideas. They just have whatever's going to move the needle. So back in the Whitewater days, it was the Republicans who were claiming, we're not doing this for political reasons. This is an outrage and abuse of power and blah, 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 blah. And the Democrats were saying, this is nothing more than you guys going after this guy because you don't agree with his politics. And now we fast forward to 2018, and it's the Republicans saying, this is just because you don't like his politics, and the Democrats saying, this is, the election
right.
was hacked, no this
man,
is a danger.
No man is above the law, blah, blah, blah. It's such a comedy, I can't even tell you.
Right, but at least we know that the politicians on both sides are consistently inconsistent.
Right, they're feckless. That's
right.
The best way to put it.
All right.
Totally feckless.
Let me tell you something that isn't feckless. LegalZoom. Fact.
Right.
Most Americans don't have a will. 20 years ago, you had to find a trustworthy attorney like, not Garagos, but someone he recommends. And you'd have to pay that attorney a bunch of money by the hour. These days, there's no excuse. You just go to LegalZoom. More than a million people have used LegalZoom for their estate planning needs. It's National Make-A-Will Month at LegalZoom.com. And now it's your turn. It's so much easier. I look at it this way. I use my IKEA analogy, but I'll use my other one, which I have an old Lamborghini.
The other one, not IKEA.
I've never used it, but I have an old Lamborghini, and I'm restoring it, and there's a couple of parts that are missing, and those parts don't exist, and you must have them made. And the cost of having something made versus going online and going, oh, it's a 74 Mustang. Okay. Is it automatic or a stick? Oh, yeah. The parts are, it's pennies on the dollar because it exists. It's there. There's a template versus bespoke. And when you go to LegalZoom, they just plug it in versus an attorney, which is essentially get the CAD and the CNC and start working from a big block of aluminum and whittle it down. You don't need to do that. You go to LegalZoom. They have a network of independent attorneys that advise you on what's best for you and your family. LegalZoom, not a law firm, so you never pay those hourly rates. Gary.
Make things a lot easier on your family when you're gone. Check out LegalZoom's Last Will and Living Trust Estate Plans now during National Make-A-Will Month at LegalZoom.com. And for special savings, be sure to enter code DOUBT in the referral box at checkout. That's code DOUBT for special savings only at LegalZoom.com, where life meets legal.
All right. Wednesday, August 29th, up on stage in Pasadena with Dr. Drew at the Ice House.
Oh, well, I got to go see that.
Come on out. We're in the neighborhood. Thursday, 13th of September, that's the Moore Theater in Seattle with Adam Ray on stage. And Anaheim Grove is coming up, and we got some shows in Phoenix coming up. Go to AdamCarolla.com for everything you need. Mark, what do you got?
I got tonight in the Hamptons, 50 Cent will be performing at the Capri Hotel, and we've got V Palm Springs that I just talked about. I think the heat's going to be a little bit better. The Casa Tropicana, which is Gary's favorite place in San Clemente. Downtown, we've got Engine Company 28 and at the airport, Terminal 7. And we've got Mediterranean Tapas at Tenney and Prova Pizza Bar in Grand Central Station coming soon to Times Square.
Now, again, anyone listening within 49 miles of those locations shall make the pilgrimage. If you're outside of that zone, you need not apply.
You're not invited.
All right. And of course, check out the Steve Austin show on at Podcast One. And he's really funny. He's really interesting. And he's a good guy. And it's a great podcast. And leave and check it out over at Apple as well. So until next time, it's Adam Kroll for Mark Garagus saying mahalo.
Thanks for listening to Reasonable Doubt. Tune in next Saturday for an all new episode. This is Corolla Digital.